Good morning. We'd like to welcome you to this study session, or actually this will be a special council meeting that we start with on this September 11th, Day of Remembrance. We'd like to go ahead and begin with a brief overview or a report from our city clerk. This agenda item is to take action on a resolution canvassing and declaring and adopting the results of the primary election held on August 26, 2014. If you'll take that, please.
Thank you, Mayor. As you know, the election was held on August 26th, and the results of the election were that for mayor, the candidates were John Giles and Danny Ray, and John received 72% of the votes, and Mr. Ray received 27%. In District 4, Vice Mayor Glover received 99% of the votes. He was running unopposed in that seat. In District 5, Robert Clough and Councilmember Luna were running in that seat for that seat. Councilmember Luna received 59% of the votes, while Mr. Clough received 40% of the votes. And in District 6, the candidates were Kevin Thompson and Trevor Hansen. Mr. Thompson received 57% of the votes, and Mr. Hansen received 42% of the votes. So the candidates, I will just highlight those again. The candidates elected were John Giles for mayor, Chris Glover for council member in District 4, David Luna in District 5, and Kevin Thompson in District 6.
Okay, thank you. Any questions by the council members? Okay, then entertain a motion to accept. We have a motion by the vice mayor, a second by council member Summers. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? It is unanimous.
Wait a minute, isn't he conflicted?
Accepting your results. Wonderful. Well, congratulations to all of you and your successful campaigns and elections. And we'll look forward to having Council Mayor or Mayor-elect John Giles with us here in a little while. And we'll look forward to inviting him up. So thank you. Question? Oh, Mr. Thompson. Would you stand? There you are, Kevin. Stand up. We'd love to do a little applause for you. Congratulations, all of us. Okay, why don't you come on up? Kevin, come up here if you would. And as soon as council member or mayor-elect Giles gets here, we'll invite him also. There's an empty seat. And so, wonderful. Thank you. Okay, so I'll entertain a motion now to adjourn this special council meeting. We have a motion by the vice mayor, second by council member Kavanaugh. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. We are adjourned. Okay, our next item is our regularly scheduled study session of the Mesa City Council. Our first item on the agenda will be to review the agenda for our regularly scheduled council meeting, which will follow this meeting that we're having here this morning on the study session. So if everybody's computers are up and running, Mr. Thompson will make sure and get you all the information. Good, he'll share it there. So reviewing the agenda, on page 2, we have items 1 through 3C. The next page is 3D through 5A. Five B through 5D, 5E through 5G, 5H through 6C, 6D through item 9, which is the last one on the page. And that is it. If there's no questions on the consent agenda for later, we'd like to welcome Mayor-elect John Giles up to the front. You didn't hear our applause, so let us give it to you. That's fine. We should have told you. It's been a busy week, as you can imagine. Good to have you here, Mayor-elect, and They read through the numbers, and we're excited to have both you and Kevin with us today. So we're just working through the first item on our study session, and I think they're getting you the paperwork there. Okay, we had no questions, so the next item will be 2A, which is hear presentation, discuss, and provide direction on the priority uses for and the revised review schedule for the 2013/14 home funding proposal. And we'd like to invite up Tammy Albright to lead this discussion and give us this information. Good morning.
So, wrong one. Sorry. Had to get the right one up. So what we're going to talk about today is the home funding. And the process that we're looking at putting it through is to take it outside of our normal funding process and condense it so that we can help those who are applying for low-income tax credit projects. What we have is about $122,000 from prior year funds, a little over $500,000 from the last year, and we anticipate having the same, equal to what we received this year for next year's funding. So that's about $999,000. So we think around $1.5 million will be available for next year. What we're recommending from staff is about $1.2 million go to rental projects, $300,000, that's about 30%, go to what's called a community development housing organization to run a home buyer program. Now, we are required to put 15% towards a CHOTO, but the reason we're recommending 30 is because we didn't do any CHOTO activity or home buyer activity last year. So by putting 30, that keeps our balance sheet for HUD up there, as well as the fact that, like I said, we haven't had a home buyer program for the last couple of years. And then we'd like to have about $80,000 set aside to help or support those home buyers. What that does is it allows us to help with down payments or subsidies. Now, on here, we have staff have brought, we've recommended 1 to 2 projects maximum of the low-income housing tax credits. And the reason we're doing that is not, it's not necessarily a recommendation, it's just a discussion of capacity. What happens when we approve the low-income tax credit projects is we're dealing with 3 years at a time. So right now we're doing the funding process of who we will recommend or honor or give award money for next year. Plus we're dealing with all the contracts, environmentals, and all of the paperwork for those who received them last year, and the previous year's recipients were dealing with the construction parts and processing invoices. We only get about $99,000 a year in admin money to run this program. As you can imagine, that's about one person and an admin. It's not enough for us to clearly run the program and make sure that we are putting the city at low risk. We have the time to do what we need to do, and we're not making any errors. So that's really a discussion point. The reality is all of the recipients will be in front of you in January, and it's up to council how many you want to approve, how much that we would give support letters to. But we want that discussion to be coming as we work through this, is that that needs to be in the back of our mind, is there is a capacity issue to run several of these projects.
Yes, question for you, Councilmember Benelli.
Tammy, yesterday we spoke about the potential of maybe taking some of the staff cost, the admin burden, off of the city by passing it on to the developer. And you had done some research yesterday and said that there was a portion or one part of the project that could potentially be passed on. Can you explain?
Yes, we have already pursued that option to an extent, in that the environment, we have consultants on board for the environmental and the Davis-Bacon. We still have to review them, and we are still the ultimate signer on them, and we're responsible if there are any errors. But there is one other task that we may outsource, and that would be the subsidy layering and financial review. All other tasks that are required that we do for HUD would, if we outsource them, have to come from that $99,000 admin pot. So I don't know that that would really get us that much further, but we certainly will pursue outsourcing the subsidy layering.
So I'd like to just make one comment about that. I mean, it seems like an efficient way to run the home program by having the professionals that is kind of their only job is to go over the environmental of the Davis-Bacon or the subsidy layering versus an employee in your department that has to also know CDBG and monitor contracts and all of that. It just seems like there potentially could be some cost savings, and I'd like to see that we still investigate if there's other communities that pass any portion of that on to a developer so that we can lighten the burden on the city staff.
Yeah, we will pursue every avenue we can find.
Councilmember Luna.
And really, that was my question. If you could pass some of the burden on the developers that are applying for these tax credits, yeah. Is that something that they could do in terms of the administrative costs? So it releases some of the burden on your staff.
Yeah, only those three tasks. We did do research yesterday and pulled up the home program, what is an eligible admin cost versus what is an eligible program cost that we could pass on to the developer. And those three tasks would be something that we could pass on. And part of that is our interpretation. Mm-hmm. The only thing that it really says you can pass on is environmentals. Mm-hmm. We're making the interpretation that we could still pass on the subsidy layering and the Davis-Bacon. Again, we are ultimately going to do the final review and sign off on it. Right. But if we can pass on somebody else mm-hmm. doing the work and not charge our admin pool,
right.
That's what we're doing. And again, that's our interpretation. Mm-hmm. HUD may not agree with that.
Right. And you'll also look at other communities for best practices.
Yes, we are going to make some calls to some other communities. We did not have time last night to get a right. hold of them, but we are going to make some calls and find out what they're doing, how are they operating with only 10% admin, and see if we can kind of find other ways.
Councilmember Cavanaugh and then the Vice Mayor.
Yeah, I want to echo Councilmember Benelli and Luna's comments. I think that we can explore other use of outside consultants or professionals to help ease the burden. I do think that other communities use this as a tool because of the limiting factor of 10%. Each year, we're going to have a different pool mm-hmm. of projects, and we consider within that pool. And, you know, it really, I don't want us as a city to be limited by our administrative capacity, because we have federal funds that we can use for admin, but we can supplement that with city funds. That's a policy choice by the council. If we believe the projects are important to the community for both for housing and economic development, there's nothing that says that we can't allocate additional city funding for that particular year, considering the range of projects that we have, to be able to either accommodate the outside professional services we may need or to supplement the internal services. Because I understand your concern over staff time and management of projects, but this is an issue that every great American city has to deal with. And again, we're a large community, and we can expect to have multiple and a variety of applications each year to consider. And obviously, the administrative capacity should be something that the manager's office and council look at when you're weighing the cost-benefit analysis of the project. So I'm glad you're doing that research. I think that you will find that there are outside professionals who just focus on certain narrow areas that can really save time and effort on your part. Obviously, as a community, we have sign-off on the project, which is why you have the ultimate responsibility. But I think there are ways that we can go about this that don't limit people's vision and imagination in terms of presenting proposals for us to consider.
Okay, thank you. Vice Mayor.
Just a quick question for you, Tammy. I know when we began this process, especially with low-income taxing credit houses, we weren't familiar with it, so we hired a consultant. Has your staff received the training to understand the requirements that HUD has for these type of projects?
Yeah. the consultant we actually had on board at the time some of these started was provided by HUD. So we didn't actually have to hire the consultant. HUD had provided a consultant to help us with our entire home program, help us write a manual, because we had been audited and there were some errors in some of some of the agreements that we had written, and so they had brought in a consultant to help us put the whole program back on track. And so through that process and those individual meetings, my staff has been trained. Well, our staff.
Yeah, the staff, I would say. We have received training, but it was very limited. It was very short.
Like most of the training we have received in the past is very generic. You might say, the devil's in the details. That is something they never give us unless you start really asking questions, and then that takes a lot more time. And that training is, like I said, very generic. The time is not spent for a consultant to come in and just sit down with us and go over this in very detailed process. Because if they did, it would make our life a lot easier. What I find is I have to do a lot of research on my own to determine what needs to be done, what those differences are between home and LIHTC, what you need to look at when you're doing both a LIHTC and home project combined versus doing home by itself versus LIHTC by itself. And there's a number of factors to consider when you're doing that.
However, we have sent staff off to both environmental and Davis-Bacon training. We have some more Davis-Bacon training coming up. So we try to stay on the training as much as possible, and we have developed a really good relationship with our HUD rep, who has been there to answer any questions we shoot his way. So it's been, we've developed a process where we can research, or if we have questions, we get a very quick answer.
Okay. Councilmember Richens and then Councilmember Benelli.
Okay.
Are you good with that, Councilmember Benelli?
Maybe later.
Oh. Okay, perfect.
And I think that kind of what you said, Ray, is indicative of what I think that we're proposing, is that if you have somebody that kind of does this in their sleep, right?
Yes.
They would be able to do it quicker. You wouldn't have to kind of go through the wonderful HUD regulations that are so fun to read. And it would have, there would be somebody with some prior experience, maybe from other communities, that could help you.
Yes, it's very much needed. It is very much needed.
And then I have one other comment. When we talked about the 1 to 2 project maximum, I mean, I kind of look at this federal funding, and I'm not even sure if this is appropriate, but it's like a windfall every year that we get this money from the federal government, and it's, you know, a way to invest in our community and leverage the dollars. If we're leveraging $990,000 to a $17 million project, or we're doing more than one project and leveraging it to $50 million, I don't even think that's right, $500 million, right? I don't know. A lot of money. I just think that that's a better use of our funds. And if we have to chip in a few city dollars to get that leverage, I think that that's a huge bang for our buck versus, you know, putting all of our funding into potentially one project or two and not being able to leverage that for the low-income community here in the city.
Yeah, and again, that's just really a talking point. Ultimately, all projects will be in front of council in January for a final decision. That was a talking point to let, there could be an issue if we support several of them and several of them receive the tax credits.
Okay. Feel free to go on.
Okay. So basically what we have to do is we're going to need to put the home program out on a separate RFP. So we're going to pull that out from the normal funding process, which usually isn't in front of you until about April for final approval. But the cutoff for the low-income tax credit projects is March. So in order for us to give them a stronger support letter, we need to have council's decision before that point. So that's why we're condensing this whole process. We are recommending that the low-income tax credit projects be a target for that pool of rental. Now, obviously, there other people may be applying as well that aren't going for tax credit projects, but that's what we're saying could be our target, because again, because of the leveraging. So here's basically our schedule. It's tight. If council approves this, the public notice has to go out before 11:30 today so that we can meet this timeline and be back in front of you with, we're thinking about January 26th with final decision. That will again allow us to give stronger support letters.
No pressure or anything, huh? Yeah. Councilmember Luna.
So, Tammy, are we locked into that year window? Is there any way that we could do it, you know, extend it to 2 years? Is that a possibility?
Sure. The home program does allow multi-year awards. In fact, you can even hold your funding process every other year. Okay. We've chosen not to do that because of the cuts we have been seeing through the programs. we didn't want to be in a situation where we actually were in contract to honor money that we weren't even sure we were going to get. When we do it annually, it's all built on how much money we get. So if you do a multi-year contract, you're saying we're going to lock our money up in this contract that we don't even have yet, and we're not 100% sure how much we're going to get. So we, from a risk standpoint, have pulled back and just done the annual process.
But that's an alternative. That's something that
sure.
We can
do. Sure. I want to reiterate, it's not really a contract we can enter into. We can do a pre-award,
basically, in that mm-hmm. situation. HUD does not allow us to enter into a contract unless all funding is secured for the project. There's a site-specific address associated with that project. Environmental clearance has been done. So there's a number of factors. We can do a conditional pre-award, what they call preliminary award, but that's it. The other problem you run into when you commit that money to that project, you're also saying that you're hoping that you get tax credits again next year. And if they don't get tax credits then next year and we commit that money or pre-award it, we run into a commitment deadline of we have 2 years to commit that money. If we don't meet it, HUD sweeps the money. So tying that money up for over a period of 1 year, maybe a year and a half, and waiting to see if they get tax credits could jeopardize losing all that funding.
Councilmember Richards.
Our attorneys are, in writing these contracts, can we write them in a way that can give the commitments that the project applicants need but protect us if we don't receive the amount of funding? I mean, are there ways to structure the contract law in such a way that we could make a longer-term commitment for them so they have what they need? Or maybe this new time frame adjusts for that just fine and it's not an issue anymore.
Oh, this is why we've condensed it, so that we can give them strong award letters before the tax credit cutoff date.
So, in your opinion, I mean, because I was intrigued by Councilmember Luna's comment about a 24-month commitment period. Mm-hmm. But if this new time period takes care of that issue, then we don't need to worry about it. Would that be?
This new time frame would give them support letters in time. The 24-month, like Ray said, the only thing we really would be concerned is we have 24 months to commit it in contract. So if you award somebody 24 months to go for tax credits and they don't get the tax credits in those 2 years, we are in trouble with our commitment funds as far as committing the funds.
It's not the end of the world if some of that money goes back. it isn't. The other question I had is, what is the plan for attracting or developing capacity for a community housing development organization? Is that what CHODO?
The CHODO
stands for, Community Housing Development Organization?
Home
ownership has been a gap for us, and it's always been a priority of this council to do home ownership. And I know we've had a capacity gap since we lost agencies. So what's the plan to either build capacity or attract a partner for someone to do this kind of program?
We have worked with HUD, and they did do some training recently. Unfortunately, it was only open to current CHODOs. And we have been talking with HUD over and over about we need to get some training in here so that we can build new CHODOs. That has not happened yet. But that is our goal, is to actually have HUD come in and help us do the training that would build the capacity.
One suggestion I think I'd make is maybe finding existing CHODOs that might be willing to share some capacity building with us in a partnership over time. So I know that there's others in the Valley that exist that are quite experienced that may be willing to come in for a period of years and partner and build up local capacity. I've talked to a few that have indicated that they'd be interested in doing that. But
yeah, I've spoke to a few myself. Newtown is one of those, as well as CPLC.
Both very good organizations.
Yeah. Thinking about coming
top two, I have in my mind as well. So,
and hopefully, we will see them apply for CHODO to run a home buyer program for us next year, and then that can help. We can bring in partners to help with that, and maybe build that capacity that way as well.
Thank you. Wonderful. I think the last comment is just kind of tagging on what Councilmember Kavanaugh said about policies around funding decisions, that we shouldn't be afraid to supplement funds to run these programs. If this is really what we want to see happen, these transformative community projects, these big things coming in, then we need to really think about how we apply our funding and not just limit it to this $99,000 pot, but let's consider how we go beyond. I know one way that we've talked about doing that was how we apply human service funds and CDBG, and we have a lot of applicants that apply for $20,000 or $30,000 worth of funding to fund part of a project, and that's really hard to manage. And really the idea behind these federal funds that we've talked about for the last 5 or 6 years has been to do big projects that change the landscape permanently for the capacity. I think a really great example of that is what a New Leaf did at a lot of Mesita Shelter. They built a fantastic project there, permanently changed their ability to deliver services at that facility, totally changed the dynamic on that. And I think it really is going to help a lot of people over a number of years. So the human service funds, however, that come through the utility bills, the pot's about $500,000 or $600,000, and the need's about $1 million. So I know there's been efforts within the city to figure out how to increase that kind of funding. At some point, we're going to really need to make a tough decision about that. The reason that's important is because those funds are not federal funds. They're city funds. And they don't have the same strings and restrictions and monitoring associated with them as the CDBG and the home funds. And so by limiting the number of home funds, home projects, and limiting the number of CDBG projects, we can then bring our admin costs down closer to what we have available to us within the program. So that's kind of the thinking behind that kind of thing. And if we can get more money to that human service, which I know Councilmember Kavanaugh has been a champion for years, I think we can achieve this other goal of really taking these federal funds as far as they possibly can go. So thank you.
All right, thank you. Great overview. Others that want to weigh in on this, continue. You're seeking direction from us. So you feel like you're getting the direction you need, especially with the 11:30 deadline?
I'm hoping that it's a go.
Yeah.
So
you've anything else to add on this? And so maybe if you can summarize back to me what you've heard from the council, the direction you want to go.
Okay, sure. Basically, to move forward, putting our public notice out today saying we have these funds available under the condensed time frame, and ultimately we'll be back in front of you with an analysis of whoever submits during that time frame, with as much of analysis we can give you. Oftentimes, they don't have a complete package ready until the deadline that they are submitting for the low-income tax credits. So we ask for a lot of information so we can do an analysis on these. So we may not be able to do a full financial analysis or things like that, but we will put all of the projects in front of you come January. And then it's up to council to decide who to fund.
Okay, council members, you good with that? Yeah. Everybody? Council member-elect, mayor-elect, you good? Okay, good. You have your... oh, they count. Okay, then you have your direction, and that is on item 2A. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll go ahead now and move to item 2B, which is hear presentation, discuss, and provide direction on creating a preference population for CDBG and home federal grants to elderly persons, disabled persons, homeless persons, and professional persons as permitted under the new federal regulations. Ms. Albright.
Hit me again. Basically, what we're trying to do on this is process a substantial amendment to our consolidated plan to set preferences. Currently, our consolidated plan has high priorities, but they don't have preferences. So the preferences we're looking, and HUD does outline what you can choose as preferences, is these four: the disabilities, the elderly, the homeless. And then new, as of March, is HUD started allowing professionals, like teachers and artists. That allows you to assess your area, what your needs are in that area, and then target a specific population. Again, though, they are still all subject to the income qualifications. So even if you have teachers as a preference, let's say you have an area that is having a difficult time attracting teachers to work there, you could, in concert with a project, say, we will give you home money for 5 or 6 units, but we want a teacher preference so that we can get teachers in. Those teachers still have to income qualify. So, but it allows a little bit more flexibility. We have taken this to both the Housing and Community Development Board and the Community and Cultural Development Committee, and it was approved or recommended to go forward with support. Again, three of them already are high priority. The professionals is kind of a new category. And then the next steps would be, if this is approved, we do need to go out for the 30-day public comment period, and we have to have a public hearing in that time frame with our Housing and Community Development Board, and then we would target being back in front of council November 3rd with an actual resolution to be approved that we would file with HUD. And then we are currently in the process of developing the next five-year consolidated plan, and if approved, we will make sure that these preferences carry on into the new plan.
Okay, Councilmember Kavanaugh.
I was going to say I appreciate the staff's recommendations. I support them. I know through my work with National League of Cities, there are many other communities that have made these changes as well and have been a benefit to those communities, particularly in terms of the targeted professionals that they were trying to attract for whatever particular need within their community. So I hope we go ahead and do this. Thank you.
Okay. Other questions, concerns? Do you have the direction?
Yeah.
Okay. I want you to move forward. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Okay. Wonderful. Thank you. Item 2C is here, presentation, discuss, and provide direction on the Falcon Field Area Strategic Plan document. I thought I'd just kick this off as we have these individuals coming up, wonderful individuals. When I had the opportunity to take the role as mayor in consultation with Mayor Smith and many other people, we realized we were having amazing success out in the airport area, Phoenix Gateway Airport. Thank you. It's been a long week. And realizing that we wanted to take a lot of those components and realize what we could do to other parts of the city. And one of those that became very evident, a lot of energy was happening, some concerns. We realized that the Falcon Field area needed a strategic vision, a mile-high look at what we needed to do to have that be more successful than it already is. And so we took the opportunity to put together this visioning committee of amazing individuals from throughout the community. We were excited that they would agree to serve. We have the chairman with us today, Chairman Rich Adams, who has a long history in this city of serving through volunteer and boards and committees and others, and a tremendous leader. And we asked him to take the lead of this visioning committee and help us to find what we needed to do for the future out in the Falcon Field area. So we look forward now to having that report back, and hope that the council will feel free to ask any questions as they go through their process. So, Mr. Jibjiniak.
Good morning. Thank you, Mayor, members of council. It's good to be back in front of everybody. Let me do a quick introduction or two. To my right, everybody should know Ms. Jay O'Donnell, Deputy Director of Economic Development, had a large role in this strategic plan going forward. To my left, the mayor just did the introduction I had. So actively involved in planning board, former chairman there, former chairman of the Economic Development Advisory Board, and now chairman of the Falcon Field Strategic Visioning Commission. So, Rich, why don't you go ahead and start us off?
Well, thank you, Bill. I think all that introduction just says I have a lot of time on my hands. And I'm glad to spend it helping the city. As you know, the Falcon Strategic Visioning Commission was established by Mayor Finter and approved by council back in April to accelerate the pace of economic growth and ensure the Falcon Field area continues to excel and grow. And, Mayor, I would like to commend you for having the leadership and vision to establish that commission. Very much appreciated. During 4 months and seven formal meetings, the commission, working with city staff, and Bill and Jay are the primary leads there. They were great to work with. We've prepared a strategic action plan that will, if implemented and funded, key, will result in robust and dynamic change within the Falcon Field Economic Activity Area. This was approached with a blank canvas, no boundaries, no holds on the past approach from a very high level, as the mayor indicated, with the idea of what can we envision here and let's not worry about any preconceived notions. I'd like to recognize the commission members. These were great folks to work with, each and every one of them. Gerald Blomquist, Mainspring Capital, Mike Hanel, Cassidy Turley, Craig Kitchen, MD Helicopters, Tannis McBean, the Vistas Pavilion out at Los Andes Golf Club, Rosa Roy, Creative Human Resources Concepts, and Otto Schill, Jackson White Law, and I believe Otto and Jerry are here with us this morning. I hope I haven't missed anyone else.
Thank you.
The objective of the Falcon Field Economic Activity Area, and that is the FFEAA, we've created a new acronym for MESA, for the strategic visioning process is a concerted effort to establish a strategic economic direction for Falcon Field Airport and the surrounding non-residential areas in Northeast Mesa to guide future development. I want to stress this was not just about the airport. It was about the entire Falcon Field Economic Activity Area, which Bill and Jay will get into the greater details of here in just a moment. The visioning process generated a strategy critical to providing a course of action to support and retain existing on and off airport businesses, attract new businesses that supply high quality jobs. Bill will later define what a high quality job is. To attract those to the FFEAA and to protect it from residential encroachment and development. And I cannot overstress the importance of that. I'll turn it over to Bill now and to Jay to get into the details.
Thank you, Rich. Appreciate all your help and support through this whole process. The third slide on your presentation, unfortunately, there's only eight slides in front of you, so it's not a long one, defines
the last one, which was only five.
I'll work on that. As the chairman just indicated, it's not about just the airport, it's the greater area. And the commission defined the activity area as one that's bounded by our northern border. To the west is Gilbert Road, to the east is Ellsworth, and to the south is the Brown. That is 35 square miles. That's a large area. So this is not just around Falcon Field and the old traditional Falcon Field area. This is a lot broader in scope. So I think that's important to note here as well. The largest single owner, however, ownership, is the Falcon Field Airport. The key, obviously, in the middle of everything, that's approximately 800 acres that is there as well. Now, on that airport, I just want to point this out. It's more than the airport, but there are over 5,000 employees in and around that airport with over 100 businesses. So that's huge. It's already a very dense and active area. So I just want to make that distinction going forward. It's a large area. I already mentioned it's 35 square miles. I'm moving on to a next slide here. But I also want to point out in the activity area, so in the off of airport or inclusive of the airport, but the whole area, there are over 600 businesses and over 19,000 jobs. So now we've gone from just an airport to a large area. It's a large economic impact, $2.3 billion in economic impact annually to the city, the region, and the state. That's huge. What's also important, I think, here is the development of other things. So the commission talked a lot about sports tourism. That is an item that will be looked at. This is an important piece. This is a mile high view. The mayor often referred to it as the mile high. This is 50,000 feet and above. This is something that, you know, allows us to, here's the strategy. We need to get into the details on how to implement and go forward. This is not into how long our lease terms or how much distance from a planning setback or anything else. That's for us to work through as we go forward. So I think it's important, sports tourism and an organic growth. And organic, I'll get into here in a second about business retention and so forth.
Just to echo, I'm very excited about the sports tourism opportunities, and there are some efforts underway through Visit Mesa and others to explore this, which really could be a game changer, I think. And I'd also like to point out to you that you'll see a lot of numbers throughout this document. These are not numbers that were pulled out of unreliable sources. These are numbers that were pulled from reliable sources, GPEC, Dun & Bradstreet, other commercial real estate sources that can be relied on.
Okay.
As As part of the visioning process, it was critical that we develop a vision for moving forward. And so we looked at the strengths, the challenges, opportunities, and untapped growth opportunities, as well as potential barriers to the success of the area. And part of that process in developing a strategic vision is supposed to really take an inventory and communicate the existing assets, but it's the strategic vision is also meant to be aspirational. So the strategic vision is that the Falcon Field Economic Activity Area will be recognized locally and nationally as a vibrant aerospace, aviation, and defense hub, a premier location for companies in industry sectors seeking a highly attractive, competitive operating environment in which to grow. Anchored by a city-owned general aviation airport and boasting a high-tech workforce, knowledge-based company decision-makers will regard the Falcon Field Economic Activity Area as a thriving destination to grow their business. That's really one of the things that I think was great to have come out of this process is a clear vision for moving forward, and then obviously taking it a step further to put together strategic recommendations on how we achieve this vision.
Okay, so let me spend the rest of this talking about the strategic steps going forward. Each one of you have a hard copy of the plan. On page 24, it starts with the first of two major components, which is business development. The second one is marketing and branding. But under business development, there are an objective of business attraction, and it goes on to business retention, business expansion. And I just want to point out, under strategies on attraction, there are 10 different steps, 10 different strategies that we're looking to step forward with. That's a major component of things. But I also think, to echo on what Rich has said, this isn't about any job. This is about a high-value, high-wage job. The county average is just over $35,000. We've targeted 125% of that. That puts us at $42,000 plus or minus. So, again, we're not chasing anything. This is a high-value, high-wage job, very important for us. The industry segments, as we go forward and looking at attraction or retention, aerospace and defense, aviation. Now, we've always been strong in aviation. We've always been strong in aerospace. But somebody might say, geez, with all the sequestration, defense budget cuts, what are we doing in that territory? I don't think you give up on what you've been had for bread and butter. This is the time to realign with them. This is the time to help them diversify. And I'll pick on Boeing here for a second. One of your largest private employers out there. So as defense budgets get cut, they've already brought in. The Chinook was here for 300 days of testing. That's out of their other rotorcraft facility in Philadelphia. They brought it here. They've brought their unmanned vehicle. They've done. They have other helicopters, the AH-6I, I think it is. They've done wiring for the commercial piece as well. They continue to diversify. Mayor, City Manager, Chief Staff, Councilmember Luna were all out here this past summer, visited with Boeing, we visited with MD, had great discussions about how they've diversified. In order to survive, they're changing their model. We need to align with that. That's important. So I'm not running away from them. I'm looking to get even tighter, and how do we help with that process? That's why we're not running away from aerospace and defense. The other one is advanced business services. Advanced business services are... think of banking, help me here, Jay.
Insurance.
All of the sales type of things, back office operations in some instances as well. That's what's moving in the marketplace. This was tailored to what's going on today, not what may have been in the past. Unfortunately, we missed an opportunity. The office market went by us and really has been really soft after the recession. So now, how do we align? It's these business sectors that we're really after. So advanced business services is one that is moving. We're seeing a lot of activity in the whole valley. We need to have our share of it in this location as well. And then I don't want to forget the tourism piece, and the hospitality industry is another component of what we're looking for going forward. Next slide is I want to get into our role in business development, role of the city. So we have already engaged in... business extension or business retention and expansion. To date, we actually have a program that we've just expanded on. We have visited over 30 companies. This is in partnership with the Chamber of Commerce, led by Andrew Clegg on the economic development staff. We have three different tiers of visits. The mayor, city manager, myself typically visit all of your larger employers, so maybe the top 10. Next tier's staff is visiting with a lot of different employers targeted on, and we did aerospace or aviation. What was the other one?
Healthcare.
And then third would be companies have actually reached us and asked for a visit. And so we've also completed those. The target, and Jay, you can jump in here again, was I think 60 visits in 3 months. She's being shy because they wanted a longer period of time. I said I need a little more aggressive timetable. It was 60 visits in 3 months. We're halfway there. We've been at it since middle of July, late July. So, you know, month and a half into it, we've had some good progress going forward. That is where 80% of your growth will come from. Existing businesses. That's important. Mayor-elect Giles, we are already trying to schedule several visits for you with several of our larger employers. Mayor Fincher did it, you know, for the last few months. That's important to have that dialogue. They all want to hear from the mayor. The question is, how do we help? And I think that's important going forward as well. Rich?
Just to echo some of what Bill's talking about here, I think the city can do quite a bit. We can tee up the ball. We can get everything in place for success to happen. But at some point in time, the private development investment community needs to come in and do their part. So I think what this plan accomplishes, it tees up the ball. If this is implemented, it'll put the pieces in place. But at some point in time, there's only so much that we can do. As many of our discussions during the commission meetings indicated, at some point in time, private development needs to step in. So.
Very true, very true. I think that the other thing that what we're not doing a great job with and something that's easily done, the city's got a lot of great processes already in place. But the message, and I can hear one of the commissioners saying this, the message has not been delivered. So it's always, we talked about facilitate, don't regulate. And I think what's important now is we continue that mantra. Planning, building have always done a great job. How do we now spread that word? Because the development community doesn't have all of that. We need to continue to get that message out. So there's already permit by inspection. Most of the development community did not know that. Great for tenant improvement projects, not ready for every project, but that's an important piece that we made the process easier. Most recently, we approved the self-certification program, and I think they love to hear that message. You can submit your building plans, your architect, your engineer can self-certify it and take that on and help us get through the process. Being able to bring companies of different sizes, not just the biggest, not just the Apples in the world, but others to the table and get through the process quicker is important message that we're partnering with the development community. They need to hear that. We need to market that. We need to then get the brand out about the Falcon Field area as well. So with that, what's next, Jay, I think is, back up one for me if you would. I just want to reiterate what Rich has already talked about, engaging the private property owners. We have found that there's a lot of properties that are not listed, properties that are, you know, even if they're available for sale, we don't know it. So we will be actually implementing, I think, a step forward to go out to the brokers, go out to a, take the message to the brokerage community at the same time, try to outreach to separate property owners so that we're getting their information and available to pitch that opportunity. Because the way the process works is we pitch every available site to the development opportunities that are there.
Councilmember Benelli.
So, Bill, during the retention visits, were those some of the companies that you reached out to, and what were the reasons why they didn't want to be listed or let you know that they're available?
I think the outreach to the businesses has been very positive. We have actually found a lot of people who have been sitting on the sidelines are now thinking about the expansion phase. They're still a little hesitant, which is a sign of the still of the economy. But I think they're either, you know, first time we did this over the last couple of years is the story about the city wasn't business friendly, we weren't open. We've overcome that in a lot of ways. You still need to hammer that message home. Now we're talking to them about their expansion plans. What can we help with? Hey, did you know that we're out at one site in Falcon Field, Corral Coal? They do about $15 million annually. $12 million of that is about in foreign countries. Have you thought about the benefits of a foreign trade zone? Can that help you? What about any other tools or programs that may be available from the state? Weren't aware of them. We sit and educate and provide those opportunities. So it's not all just what we can do, but it's also what the state and the county has to offer as well. So we're actually getting some great feedback on those visits to the business community. I think we're finding either particular land not listed and decent-sized parcels. It's just empty, and we have to go back through assessor records to find whose ownership and what's marketed. Even there's a large piece that, as we reach into one of the databases, if it's not listed, I have no access to it. So, you know, we're creating a separate database, second database, because when brokers send us flyers, we're able to then utilize those. But for the most part, there are several real estate databases which have listings. If you don't list your property, you're not helping yourself. So that's, I think, a major step forward as well. Let's go ahead and finish up. Jay, go ahead and
sure. Wrap that up. During the process, and Bill's already alluded to this, it was very evident that one of the major weaknesses of the area is that there was a real lack of a brand. And not even a negative perception necessarily, but just no perception. And so really being able to tell the story and to tell a very positive story that does exist is critical. So one of the recommendations is to develop a Falcon Field Economic Activity Area branding strategy and then follow that up with a funded marketing campaign. So the brand strategy combined with that integrated marketing plan and communications plan will definitely raise the level of awareness and promote the area to untapped markets and as well as employers. So within that campaign, performance metrics will be used to monitor the success and to basically monitor the progress of the strategies.
Okay. Councilmember Luna, please.
You know, that was one of my comments. You guys have done an amazing job with the strategic plan, but it does require resources. And do you have staff within economic development that can be dedicated to work on branding and those kind of things, as well as I also noticed on the document feasibility studies, which is going to require funding. Where is that going to come from? What do we need to do to make sure that happens?
So I think we're going to do a little bit of everything. So this is identifying Ken Chapa. Ken's here. Ken, raise your hand for me. He is the designated Falcon Field Activity Area guru. So everything that goes on, he's been with us for just over 6 months, came out of the Arizona Commerce Authority, a lot of knowledge from the state programs as well as knowledge here now as well. As far as resources, I think we're going to reach across city departments. We are looking to partners outside of the city, so Visit Mesa, for example, as we talk with them about opportunities. This is about juggling within a budget and trying to get as much accomplished at the same time. It may take longer that way, but I think we're trying to live within that constraints of what we have today. But still, I think we can get a lot of things accomplished. Working with the airport, I know Corrine's already started down the road on several things as well. So you can see us reach out to PIO. You can see us reach into planning. You can see us reach into building. City manager's been very supportive of trying to get it all done within our existing resources as well.
Councilmember Cavanaugh.
You know, over the years when we get reports like this from our private sector folks that recommend additional resources and dedicated staff persons, it creates a classic tension between a city manager's office that says do it with your existing staff versus our community that says you need designated staff. And it's really up to us, council, to give direction to the city manager in terms of what we think is important. The reality is that our economic development department is significantly understaffed when you compare to other cities in the valley, smaller cities in the valley, larger cities all around the country. And I know Mayor-elect Giles, is one of his primary goals is emphasis on economic development because of all the spinoff effects on it. And so this is one of those situations where I think we need to take the report from our citizens to heart
and have heart-to-heart talk with the management staff, because I've heard through four terms and three city managers, use existing staff to do it. Well, yeah, use existing staff for downtown. Use existing staff for Fiesta Mall. Use existing staff for Gateway. Well, we haven't cloned them, so they're individuals here, and you want to have effective work, and you don't want to have burnout. So I'm hoping that it's certainly not too early to talk about our priorities for the budgeting in the coming year. And I know it will be a challenging year, as it always is, but we're the ones that give direction. And this is one where I think we need to take what the Citizen Commission is telling us to heart. But this is just a classic tension, and we're the ones that are supposed to resolve it. So I hope we do. Thanks.
Thank you, Councilmember Kavanaugh. Councilmember Summers.
I wholeheartedly support what Mr. Kavanaugh just said, and I say that as somebody who's been an ardent supporter of increasing the staff in economic development over the last 8 years, and they are understaffed. But that said, and because this is being broadcast, I want everybody to realize that this relatively small office for a city of 500,000 people has significantly punched above its weight, maybe with the exception of Bill. He's a big guy. But when you consider the successes that have happened here in Mesa, it's been because of the work of everybody from the city manager's office to the council, and certainly economic development and the ability to leverage partnerships such as yourself, sir, who have volunteered their time and effort and energy during a period of significant economic crisis to ensure that Mesa has a vision, continues to live up to that vision, has been very successful. There's a reason that we have Apple and Able Engineering and Bridgestone and a myriad of not only large businesses like those I just mentioned, but the small ones who continue to come into Mesa to set up shop, is because it's really been not just about one office, but it has been a community-wide effort to establish a vision and say we are going to live up to that vision. So while I wholeheartedly agree that we need to add resources to economic development, because I think by adding those resources, we can increase the number of successes we have. I don't think we've lost anything in this community at all for having a small office. Rather, what we have done is built a very strong community of public-private partnerships that have helped us punch above our weight, and we've done tremendously well. So you are to be congratulated for that, as a city manager offices too, and everybody that's serving and has served on this council and will serve in the very near future.
Thank you, Councilmember Sun. Please.
One final comment. In each of these strategies, you'll see performance measures, defining success, deliverables, and a budget summary. We set ourselves up, and Jay made me hold my feet to the fire here, on performance measures. And I think that's an important piece of a strategic plan, that we've identified growth and what we expect to accomplish in this coming year and years going forward as well. So that's here in black and white. I want you to be able to reference that, because we're going to issue some kind of annual report, I think, along the way as well. So
wonderful. Question for me and then an observation. Did you?
And then after you.
Okay. Please. Chairman Adams, as you took this process through and now we have this product before us, how was it received as far as the entire committee? Did you put it to a vote and everybody had a chance to have input?
Yes, Mayor. This is a report based on the consensus of the majority of the commission. I can tell you we had some very meaningful, very lively, very engaged discussions. There were diverse opinions shared. At the end of the day, by majority vote of the commission members, we present this document to you.
Okay, I appreciate that. And early on that I shared with everybody I could, I asked them, this is not to be a paper tiger. and you're hearing a lot of the feedback from the council. We want this is to be, and this document will be produced and available to businesses that are looking to come into the area so they understand, and that we look at making sure this doesn't get set on a shelf and gather dust. And I feel confident, especially hearing the comments of our fellow council members, that we're headed in that direction. But I also realize a key to the success of this is going to be the action and the participation of the broker community, the businesses out there, everybody. It can't just be a city-driven type process. And so we need that type of input and feedback and involvement by the business community out there to make the progress. And so I appreciate that this visioning committee felt that they could have free run of this, actively debate it, spirited debates, and come up with a product. And I'm hoping that you're feeling, Chairman Adams and others, that the support is here by the council to continue. In fact, we think this is a very successful model, and we look to expand it, and we'll hear more later in this meeting about looking at other areas of the city now and getting this process going. Councilmember Summers.
Great comments.
It's 8.5 years, and I freaking forgot to turn on my mic. Come on. Those are great comments. And what I would say as far as the first one that I heard was hoping that this doesn't collect dust. We did a similar project in Mesa Gateway Strategic Development Area, and that was over a period of 2 years to come to a rather voluminous plan many years ago. And the reason it has not collected dust and has borne fruit is because this council has ardently supported, even in some instances, dug trenches and built battlements on this is the vision and you shall not cross this line, and sold that vision into the community. And that's what the community has embraced and said, yes, you will stand for that vision. And we're seeing what's happening in the Gateway area with all this economic development here. So making sure that this plan doesn't collect dust is for the council, mayor-elect yourself, to make sure that this is what we stand. We've planted our flag on this and get community buy-in. One question I do have, related to that, if we look at exhibit number 6, the zoning summary map, which is on page 38-39, if somebody upstairs wants to turn it. This is just a zoning summary map, and I understand that, but it has the traditional colors and squares that we're used to seeing in any zoning map. And this council has moved generally away from that kind of community planning, looking for something more dynamic and to some extent flexible that creates a vision. And the going back to the Gateway strategic plan, that plan doesn't use this map, but rather uses a lot of photographs pointing to areas of the type of development that we are expecting in certain areas. So the question I would have is, this is what we have now. Do we foresee changing this to something that we would see like in the Gateway Strategic Development Plan? Is that a next step for council and zoning to do a plan like that so people can open the book and say, oh, this is the type of development and the quality of development they're expecting?
And I think that we've engaged John Wesley as the planning director. He actually made a presentation to the commission, if I remember correctly. What we found, much to our surprise, but happy in a way, that there are a lot of flexible zoning opportunities already in place in the area. I think that map is reflective of that. If I go to objective one, and strategy B, it talks about direct city staff to examine and implement methods. And it goes on down to talk about flexible zoning and or overlays, signage, lease terms, and so forth and so on. That's the idea of this is what's in place today. How do we go and take a look at what flexibility is in place, and then how do we add more? Believe me, that's a major item of discussion for John and his team, how to create that flexible zoning that we've done down in District 6 along for the Elliott Technology Corridor. How do we then implement that in this area of the city as well. Flexible, as I've said before, to a developer, cutting entitlement risk is probably one of the biggest things we can do next to infrastructure as a community.
Councilmember Summers, if I may add on to Mr. Jibjiniak's comments, from a high level, we didn't want to get down into the detail of what those zoning changes overlays might be, but we felt it important to put that piece in there that he referred to direct staff to explore those opportunities. Not one but two presentations from Mr. Wesley were very helpful to the commission, but trying to keep this at a high level, we thought we would keep it to what you see here and let staff run with that.
Yeah. Right to do that. I mean, this is a strategic plan. It is not a zoning plan or a tactic. You know, determining the tactics to implement this strategy is going to be up to the city, this council, with the support of staff. So, and that was the point of my question, is asking, do we see that as going to be our next step in implementing the strategy that the community has put together? So it sounds like we're moving in that direction, but we also already have some of that flexibility built in based on the work we've done and the overall development plan for the city.
I think there's a great model to follow. You don't need to reinvent things. Just follow the model we've established and now implement it in other parts of the city, and this being the next logical place for us. The other thing, if I may, Mayor, is I think it was loud and clear from the commission, and Rich, you can certainly jump in. We've talked about protecting employment areas. There's a major discussion about this large area. Where's the development going to occur? We talked about the highway loop. And once we step back and look at the entire highway loop, if you can go from Dobson Road around the 202, you can go all the way down to the 60, as far as I'm concerned. Where are your development sites along the highway? You're very limited. Those are decisions made in the past, but I think what's important now is we preserve those opportunities that do exist today. When I look at opportunities that present themselves, you know, I can tell a client, you're only 10 minutes from the 202 and 101. They go, really? But they always think it's too far to the east. That's part of what we have to tie to in a branding campaign, in a marketing campaign. How do you tie that to that major corridor? Right now, the hottest corridor is the 101 corridor, up and down, all the way up and down. So how do we tie your 10 minutes from that corridor? And that'll be part of the challenge, but protecting those employment from encroachment, whether it's housing or other things, you know, I think it's important that we continue to look at those as great opportunities for us as well.
Councilmember Luna.
I also want to comment, and I thank you for the partnership that you've developed with the Falcon Field staff, and because that's critical as you move on with this project. The other thing that I want to comment on is that I like your focus on the retention of our current employees, Boeing, MD Helicopter, Namo Tali. That's real important. That's critical. We want to make sure that we work with them, continue to reinforce economic development with them as well. So thank you so much for putting that as part of your document.
Okay.
Chairman Adams, anything in closing?
We'd just like to, I don't know if I'm on here or not. Yeah, yep. I am. We'd just like to echo some of Bill's comments regarding some of my opening remarks, actually. Key to this, implementing and funding. Also, I talked about preserving and protecting the employment areas against residential encroachment. I think that's another very important key aspect of this because we already have identified the area. We have residential in the area that already generates noise complaints and other issues. Certainly adding additional residential to the area isn't going to minimize or diminish those issues. I think branding is key. Branding in a way that develops a sizzle for this area. It gets some noise going out there in the development community, in the brokerage community. We have a hidden gem here, and I think if we really do this branding correctly, people are going to know about the area. They're going to want to come take a look at it, not just locally, regionally, but nationally. So I think that's key, funding that branding. Final comment, the only thing left here, push the go button. This is ready to go. And I think if we push the go button, turn Bill and his team loose, I think a year from now you're going to be very happy with what results you see. And I would like to thank you, Mayor Finter, council members, for the opportunity to participate in this process. And I'm looking forward to good things happening.
Thank you. And please accept our gratitude for you and all the board member, the commission members that served here. We realize it was a lot of personal time, and we appreciate the staff. Amazing job going that direction. So thank you very much.
Is the gold button this green one? Because I've never... Yeah. I don't think you've ever pushed these.
After 8.5 years, I figured you can push
one. I've pushed all these buttons but one, this one. I'm like Willy Wonka right now.
Right. Okay, so we do have one individual that would like to speak. We'd like to invite up Mr. Gerald Bloomquist, who is a board member. And to him, we appreciate his service and looking at this. Now, normally, we kind of keep it to 3 minutes. We've been pretty long-winded, but we want to give you enough time to share your opinions and give us some information or perspective that you have. And following Mr. Bloomquist, we'll be looking for a motion to accept this report. So,
Mr. Bloomquist. The guy that brought cookies to school and probably ended up with not quite enough, so...
No, that's fine. That's fine. Jerry, if you'll go ahead and give us your full name, address.
My name's Jerry Blomquist. I'm a Mesa resident at 1330 North 40th Street, member of the committee. And was discussed, this was a majority vote to approve. There were a couple of items. I think this is a wonderful plan. I think it was well thought out. I think in a couple of areas it doesn't go quite far enough, just mainly because there's, you know, we're at 50,000 feet and there are some areas out there that the market is already telling us we need to be addressing. So instead of waiting another 6 to 12 months, I think it might be prudent for us to maybe give a little bit more direction to staff to maybe have some starting points. So what I've done is I've given you a couple of other recommendations to consider as starting points, not trying to implement them, but trying to give you some touchstones to move forward based on what our company has seen in the marketplace instead of you trying to find it. Here it is. So if you'll go to, and all this is just connection or connecting into the existing pages. So if you go first to page 25, one recommendation that I would make is add a line K to the first objective and to make this type of a deal. Businesses want certainty. Developers want certainty. This is a great plan, but there is no map here to say here's where certainty is. I think Mr. Summers brought up the fact that we need to have some pretty pictures and everything. I don't know why developers would rather look at pictures than read documents. So the easier we can make it for them, the easier we can make it for employers, the better. So if you wouldn't mind, I'll just read this. Make a public announcement for new zoning overlays. Benefits presented in parts of Scottsdale and Salt River, Maricopa, who are the two competitors to the north, include... Allow zoning overlays along the freeway and major corridors as follows. It's a planned area flex zoning. No new heavy industrial within 1,000 feet of the freeway. Flex zoning to allow general office and up to 50% distribution and clean assembly. A lot of the employers are looking for office and others. And there's not a lot of that in the valley. So there's a way to really improve our chances there. Increase the height up to 80 feet or 6 stories in the overlay area and allow an FAR, a floor area ratio, of about 0.45. That gets you employers with high density employees wanting to locate along a freeway with vision. With, you know, you can see them. A lot of that freeway is cut into the ground, so you need to get a little bit more height than the normal zoning that we've got out there. Signage, again, it's just part of the animal that we have found that with parcels of 10 acres or over, which make larger employers or major buildings, you would allow a pylon sign that would be up to 60 feet high. Now, that is something that you don't see on the northern part of Mesa, but if you drive the Scottsdale 101 area, you'll see it all the time. There's a reason for it. That's where people go. Spacing no less than 1,000 feet, no advertising or message boards, strictly for commercial employment use. This isn't billboard. And increase the size of the building signs by about 50%. Again, identity is the reason we can get people out here. 30% of the population that are working in the Scottsdale corridor, if you will, and even Tempe, 30% of them come from here. There's a reason why there's a traffic jam going one direction in the morning with nobody coming the other. We've got to make sure that these people understand, that the employers understand that we're open for business, and here's what you can expect. Instead of waiting for them to wade through this wonderful book, let's give them the map. The other area that I would recommend adding to would be on page 26, and it would become paragraph D, if you will. Study the current business model at Falcon Field to update and explore how to bring more balance of uses. Again, we talked about noise. We've talked about all sorts of things. A lot of it is miscommunication and misinformation to the employers. We need to make sure they understand they need certainty again. So recommendations would include increased ground lease terms on Falcon Field to maximum lease terms, provided that the people are willing to put more money in. In other words, you get better quality if you're going to give them a longer-term lease. If they're willing to put up more money, you know, then they can justify more than a metal building. And that's an important part for image. Part of the other obstacle or problem right now is that there's kind of a disconnect between the competition between public and private leasehold terms. Recommend that leases expiring on city-owned buildings are adjusted to at least 95% of the current lease rates being offered by non-city-owned competitors. So in other words, we encourage them to come up and compete because they know that, you know, the city isn't going to be the first one to take all of the tenants away. We need to be a partner for the people that we have there already. There's a perception among potential employers and users that Falcon Field is difficult to operate in due to training operations and an uncertain future. Couldn't be farther from the truth, but that's the perception. Here's the reasoning. Falcon Field is a standalone operation, no subsidy from the city. Current day-to-day operations, hangar leases, ground leases, fuel taxes, are barely sufficient to support to operate the field on a profitable level year to year. Any kind of capital improvements must come from federal grants, typically FAA, with some strings attached. Now, this source is becoming more problematic as the federal budget runs into the problems it's having all the time. The source of the federal funds, which is the federal budget revenue, in other words, the pot that all funds come from, are made up of 70% individual income tax revenue and 30% corporate tax revenue. The current makeup of air traffic at Falcon is approximately 25% general aviation or private individuals and not-for-profit use, and 75% commercial for-profit use. Current traffic is saturating the airspace, creating an imbalance of uses to the detriment of the general aviation population based at Falcon. That's part of the animal. We've got that, but we need to be able to show employers that we are in control of how to handle it. It appears that of that commercial use, about a third of the current air traffic is by commercial for-profit entities that aren't based on the airport. So we get no benefit from them at all. The recommendation would be that the city, maybe through the city manager, explore a model to balance the operational uses at Falcon to include increases in fees for non-tenants who do not avail themselves of the various services, training, repair, maintenance, and fuel available at Falcon while landing at Falcon. In other words, we want people to come. We don't want them to use the thing for free. We'd love to have them come and avail of our maintenance facilities, our training facilities, all of the things that we can offer there. But so much is being used right now for other uses that I think we're running into traffic problems.
Question by Councilmember Richards, or observation.
So what's your interest in all this?
Well, I'm a pilot. I am a principal in a national development company, so I think I've got a little bit of background on it.
Okay.
I live within the Falcon Field airspace, but I think the bigger thing is that for the longest period of time, I've been in Mason since 2000. I've lived in the Valley since 84. The Falcon area has been a sleepy area that, as Rich has said, you know, it's a gem. We need to be paying attention to it.
Now, it's my understanding that you filed a referendum of some kind out there. What's the nature of that, and how does it tie into all this?
It was an economic development referendum to do exactly what we're talking about here.
So does this satisfy your... You were trying to accomplish with the referendum?
It depends on what the council, you know, does with this report. I think this report and these recommendations go a long way to address that.
Okay.
I mean, you've been assailed a couple times by phone calls from, you know, threatening people, both pilots and residential.
I haven't been threatened by anybody.
Well, told him I'd stop doing that.
He has a restraining order, but...
Well, I can tell you that a number of people have been, and it's ridiculous. We don't need that from either side.
What I think we'll do, appreciate Councilmember Richin's observations. We appreciate you giving us this information. We normally keep it to 3 minutes, and we don't want to go too far
on. I appreciate the time.
So maybe if you could... Thank you for your time that you've served. We realize you're a successful business person, a lot of details, and we look forward to working with you, and you can check with other council members. Right. Councilmember Summers.
Happy to talk about it. Again, thanks. These are just touchstones. I'm not trying to push them.
Here, I appreciate both your participation on the committee and your enthusiasm so that you show up to this meeting. I think some of the things that you have, first of all, there's a lot in here to chew over. And some of these things are addressed with a question I had asked earlier about how this fits into zoning. So, for example, the signage. I like what you're talking about, signage, and that's something that this council has talked about from a city perspective is how do we improve the ability of signage, both aesthetically but as well as, you know, to be able to bring in customers and satisfy businesses' needs. So that and the height bonuses that you talked about are all something wrapped into the comments I made earlier about what are the next steps and how are we going to be able to maximize the use of this space and be flexible in the use of this space. And this stuff is exactly what I had in mind when I asked that question. So as we move forward, we discuss zoning and the council continues to work. I'm looking over at our future members because you're going to be doing a lot of the bulk of this work. I think taking some of what has been suggested, particularly on the page 25 piece, and implementing that in various strategies and in zoning is absolutely the right discussion and the next discussion that has to take place. Page 26 is something that has to be looked at a little bit in more detail. I think there's a combination of things that some of them don't necessarily apply to the city. I think some of them are business elements. Some of them are tied into the FAA and the rules that they make. So we have to have some intergovernmental conversations there. And I think the airport covers some of those things there. So there's about three different conversations that have to happen on page 26. That said, I think we ought to take these comments that have been made today and use those as a next step for moving this whole process forward. And that certainly will keep the dust off of it. I don't know enough about them, and I think they're spread out enough that I don't want to include them in anything right now. I think that needs more detail. So with that, I'll make a motion to approve the Falcon Field Economic Activity Area Strategic Plan.
Wonderful. We have a
thank
motion.
Thank you so much.
Jerry, thank you so much for your
thank
service.
Thank you, and thank you for your time.
I appreciate it. We have a second by Councilmember Luna, who is the council member for this area, and I'm sure we'll get a lot of feedback over the years. Okay, so we have a motion by Councilmember Luna and seconded by Councilmember Summers. If any further discussion? If not, we'll go ahead and vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? It is unanimous. Okay, thank you, sir. Thank you to the staff. Thank you to Chairman Adams, all the other members of the Visioning Committee. Our next item is to hear a presentation and discuss an update of the 2015 Employee Benefits Program. Mr. Gary Manning, Welcome.
Mayor and Council, we're going to condense this pretty quickly. So he's just going to really run through this pretty quickly.
We just really want to hit the highlights for you and let you know of some major changes that will be occurring in the employee benefits program for 2015. Really, this first slide we had for you was just an overview about what insurance benefits we currently have, including medical, dental, vision, and group term life. Wanted to remind you that our medical and dental benefits are currently self-funded and self-administered. Now, when I say self-administered, that means we pay our own claims, which is going to change next year. These insurance benefits really are funded through the Employee Benefits Trust Fund, which is a combination of funding sources, but primarily through city contributions and employee contributions. As I said on the next slide, really new for 2015, we are getting out of the claims payment business. Through an extensive RFP process, we have selected a company called AmeriBen, which will be adjudicating and paying our claims behind the scenes. Really, the motivation behind doing that largely came from healthcare reform. Our claims adjudication system is more than 30 years old, and it simply does not have the capability to comply with the healthcare reform requirements that we have to have in place in January. We're going to get some expedited efficiencies out of AmeriBen. Their system is healthcare reform compliant. It has all the checks and the balances and the whistles that we don't currently have. We're going to be getting some good data analytics and some reports that we haven't been able to get out of our system for a long time. So in terms of forecasting costs, we're going to do a lot better with that in terms of coming up with rates. Also new for 2015, we are going to be partnering with Delta Dental of Arizona for the first time. So as AmeriBen is paying our medical claims, Delta Dental is going to be paying our dental claims. And for the first time, we are going to be utilizing the Delta Dental Network. Now, the good news is employees who are seeing a dentist that are not part of the Delta Dental Network are not going to be required to have to go to a new dentist. It's just that those employees who go to a dentist that's within the network, they will receive greater discounts than what they're currently receiving. So we're excited about that. We think there is going to be some significant cost savings available to us by going through Delta Dental. Also new for 2015, we're going to be contracting with a company called Connect Your Care to run our flexible spending account process. An exciting deal for us. Connect Your Care is going to provide our employees something that they have been asking for quite a number of years, and that is debit cards. So Connect Your Care in December is going to be providing some debit cards that are smart coded. So employees can swipe that card just like any other debit card and pay for eligible medical expenses. The other great thing about this contract is employees who need to submit some sort of a medical claim. Right now, it's very much a paper process. They have to copy off the receipts. They have to hand deliver it to the benefits office. It's very manual. As a result of going through Connect Your Care, employees are going to be able to submit those claims via an app on their smartphone or online. And the last thing that is going to be really cool about this process, the reimbursement will come to them through direct deposit of their bank. So we feel like we're sort of coming into the 21st century when it comes to administration of the flexible spending account process. Connect Your Care will also have a 24/7 customer service operation. So we think in a number of ways, we're really making some good advantages. For 2015, we're going to stay with CVS Caremark as our prescription drug manager. No change there. And I'm happy to report to you and to all employees that as a result of a very healthy employee benefit trust fund and as a result of some aggressive cost containment measures we put into place 3 years ago, we are not anticipating or recommending any increases in employee premiums for 2015. As a result of healthcare reform, there are some changes that we're going to have to make. We're going to be removing one of our medical plans called the Choice Plus Medical Plan. Not a big impact. There are only a handful of retirees that are on that plan now. They have been so notified and be given some information on some other opportunities for them. We have to get rid of that plan because under healthcare reform, we would be taxed under it, something called a Cadillac tax that you may have heard in the news, and that's just because that plan is too rich. It exceeds the maximum value that healthcare reform says we have to have, and the difference we would be taxed on. So now is the time to get rid of that plan. Healthcare reform is going to require us to implement some out-of-pocket medical expenses on the prescription drug side. We currently have those out-of-pocket expenses on the medical, but not on the prescription side. Healthcare reform is going to require us to cover at 100% some new preventative screenings, and our part-time employees are going to get a little bit of a bump in this process in order to meet healthcare reform requirements of affordability. On our basic plan, the city is going to have to increase its contributions from 60% to 80%. Again, not a significant cost impact in that, but something that we will have to do to comply with healthcare reform. There are only 60 employees that would receive that additional premium contribution. Currently, the city contributes 60% towards the total contribution. The city is going to be contributing about 80%. Only about 60 employees that would be impacted by that. So really, the cost is fairly negligible on that. Do we happen to know what the dollar amount is?
I don't have the full dollar amount. It's somewhere between $178 on a family basis per month that the city would be contributing rather than the employee actually paying that.
Okay, so round figures, 180 times 12 times 60.
Roughly.
And I have to do the math.
Yes.
Thanks a lot.
You betcha. Thing that we want to alert you to, one important change, the retiree health plan eligibility for employees that were hired after January 1 of 2009, we are going to allow them to, after 20 years of service, to stay on our retiree health plan. We removed that requirement back in 2009. The difference being when we allow them back onto the plan after 20 years of service, they will have to pay both the employee and the city portion of the premium. However, the combination of those two is still less than what those retirees would have to pay if they went through the Arizona State Retirement System or through some third party. We've been working with our union groups to be able to get those employees back onto the plan, so we're happy about doing that. Open enrollment this year is going to run October 13 through October 27, and we are going to have our annual employee wellness fair again on October 14th, running from 9 to 3. Flu shots will be available there. We're going to be able to have some staff that we've hired on our new wellness center to make some introductions there, and we think it's going to be a great event. And that's it.
Okay, any questions? Any further questions or observations? Thank you. We realize the millions of dollars of savings that I've watched over the last few years from your good work in this area. We realize this is a major employee benefits is a major expense that we have, an appropriate one, obviously. So thank you. Please keep being innovative coming up. Looking forward to the clinic opening and those opportunities. So thanks so much for your work.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Okay, the next item is 2E, appointments to Downtown Visioning Committee, and I'd like to just share with you, it's my pleasure to announce the appointment of a new ad hoc committee, this one geared towards creating a shared downtown vision and goals. These members represent a cross-section of creative and innovative thinkers representing local and homegrown interests, education, arts, and cultural advocates, downtown businesses and industry, restaurants, transit-oriented, oriented and urban developers. I want to acknowledge that Vice Mayor Chris Glover has provided outstanding insights and recommendations that we've incorporated into these appointments. Those individuals, and I won't go through all of their backgrounds, but amazing individuals. We have Ms. Jo Wilson, who is with us today with Benedictine University. Maricopa County Supervisor Steve Chukuri, who is also the president and CEO of the restaurant Arizona Restaurant Association. Miss Debbie Elliott, who has a long history of involvement and contributions in the arts and cultures area. Mr. Charles Humantle, an attorney and who has done development in downtown Mesa. Mr. Marco Moraz, who has a restaurant, Republica Empanada, has done amazing, having the success, that young generation coming up. We're excited to have him there. Mr. Rich Martin, Marchant, who is with Crescent Crown, a great individual, longtime Mesa person. We always talk about going to high school in the old days down at Westwood. And also, last but not least, Mr. Lorenzo Perez, who is a wonderful individual involved in redevelopment and investment in the Valley called Venue Projects. And so we're really excited about these recommendations that we're making to the council for this ad hoc committee, and I'd like to turn some time over to the Vice Mayor with some observations.
Thank you, Mayor. The inspiration of this committee was basically brought about through conversations and feedbacks I have with multiple downtown Mesa partners who all believe that there need to be a well-defined vision going forward for downtown. It seemed the appropriate time with light rail being set to complete next year. We want to take advantage of infrastructure that's being put in place and of economic and market opportunities as well. This committee is being asked to recommend a shared vision and broad goals that set clear path and intention for the development of downtown, collaborate with key downtown agencies and partners, consider future growth opportunities, untapped urban growth sectors, barriers to success, and existing and future market potential, and to review existing plans and strategies to build on them, reaffirm, and prioritize those outcomes. Like you, Mayor, I'm very proud of and grateful to those that accepted to be on this committee. The caliber and quality of these individuals speaks volumes of Mesa and their commitment to serve. I'm also very confident in their creative and collaborative abilities that they can come up with this plan. I'm particularly grateful for Jo Wilson with Benedictine University and her willingness to chair this committee. With her enthusiastic vision and outcomes-oriented vision, I know that they'll be able to accomplish great things on this committee. And so with that, Mayor Fincher, I'd like to place a motion on the table to approve the formation of the Downtown Vision Ad Hoc Committee and the seven members as they have been presented.
Wonderful. We have a motion by the Vice Mayor. We have a second by Councilmember Luna. Just an observation. I've been working closely with Mayor-elect John Giles in this process, realizing that we're handing this off within a week, and he's had great input into it, and we're excited to have Mayor Giles take and continue this. Any other observations or comments? Yes, Councilmember Summers.
I'll just make a brief comment. I think this is a great idea and something we've done successfully. Obviously, here's yet another one, but something we've done successfully throughout the community. Each one of the areas that we have done a focus for a strategic visioning plan have different assets and attributes. I was just recently back in Washington, D.C., and I am impressed by the level of economic development that's happening there, and particularly in a downtown fashion, vertically integrated mixed use, and particularly the development of market rate housing throughout downtown. And I would hope that this committee would really focus on the development of those types of vertically integrated mixed uses, bringing jobs, the right balance of housing to jobs to the downtown area, and particularly trying to attract those market rate opportunities that have eluded us thus far. Other than that, I will be in support.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments? We have a motion and second. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? It is unanimous. Wonderful. Thank you. Next item, item three, is information regarding the current job order and contract processes. Any questions for our engineering folks? No? Okay. Item four is acknowledge receipt of minutes of various boards and communities. We have a motion by the Vice Mayor and second by Councilmember Kavanaugh. Any comments on the... Okay. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Next item is hear reports on meetings and conferences attended. Councilmember Kavanaugh and then Councilmember Summers.
Thank you, Mayor. I'd like to report on an event this morning at 7 o'clock in District 3. We had kicked off a volunteer project that's part of our 9/11 Remembrance Day. And I want to thank Laura Rodriguez, our AmeriCorps volunteer, who helped put this together. This our about 40 volunteers are going to be painting a house of longtime resident of District 3, Mr. James Church, who's a veteran, original homeowner from 1958 in first place. And we had volunteers from AmeriCorps, Hands on Phoenix, Wells Fargo, the Southeast Valley Association of Realtors. It was a great event to, in one small way, it really demonstrates the community spirit that illustrates the best of patriotism in our country and kind of is very reflective of the spirit that arose in Mesa after 9/11 for those of us who were serving back at that time. So I just wanted to thank all the volunteers who came together this morning who are working there right now. They had a moment of silence at 8:46 and will be continuing their work. And I know that Mr. Church was very pleasantly surprised at at the assistance that he received. Thank
Wonderful.
You.
Wonderful. And for many that don't realize, Councilmember Kavanaugh is a great advocate for the veterans in this community. I've watched him put his fingerprints and his energy behind many of the efforts we're doing, and also a great supporter of public safety for decades, his whole life, really. So thank you for that service. Councilmember Summers.
Mayor, I just returned from Washington, D.C. As I had mentioned previously, I was attending a meeting of the National EMS Advisory Council under the Department of Transportation. I've been serving on this committee for 4 years, and I am preparing to term off. As I do so, the last project I am involved with is to make some recommendations to the Secretary of Transportation on continuing to explore community paramedicine and programs such as the one implemented by the Mesa Fire and Medical Department and their TRV program in partnership with Mountain Vista Medical Center. Our TRV program was one of three, it received one of three innovation grants toward community paramedicine. For those of you who don't know what that is, it's taking the paramedics that you see on ambulances and fire trucks and using them to bridge a gap in the healthcare community that both reduces cost of care, but most importantly, improves access to care, because many of the 911, not all, but a fair portion of the 911 calls received are received because somebody didn't have the proper access to care, and either it's a low acuity call that really should be handled in a different setting, or it is a severe call that became severe because they did not have access to care. So this is something that has been worked on. Mesa is a leader and an innovator in this field, and I've been privileged to work both with the state of Arizona and at the national level on the NEMSAC to try to get our head around what this community paramedic is and how it can best be applied to all of our communities and not just in Mesa. So I've been privileged to do that. And then starting this afternoon, Mesa and Tempe will be co-hosting the National League of Cities Public Safety and Crime Prevention Committee, and I will report next week on the work of that committee. But we will be all over the place. We're going to have an opportunity to meet here and in Tempe. We have some Mesa restaurants going to be supplying us with food. We're going to meet over at the Hall of Flame Firefighting Museum, best kept secret, most antique fire trucks in the world located here. I think technically that's in Phoenix, but we'll get past that. As is the, we'll take a tour of the operations center, the counterterrorism operations center at the FBI headquarters in Phoenix as well, Saturday morning. So we're busy schedule.
Okay. Thank you. Others? I just wanted to take a minute to let you all know it has been an amazing last few days that we've been all operating on. We've been operating in a state of emergency here in the city with major flooding in the southeast portion of the community. Thanks to the valiant efforts of all that have been involved, and it would take me hours to be able to recognize everyone, we've had no serious injury, we've had no deaths, we've had a lot of damage and destruction throughout the community. We will be working for weeks ahead to try and mitigate that, but I've seen amazing leadership rise up throughout the community, through the city staff, an army of volunteers out there that are ready to help and serve. The entire council with the mayor-elect and council member-elect have been involved and participating, and it's just amazing to see the efforts and what's continued forth. So my appreciation and gratitude, we don't have all the time to take recognize this here, but we want all to know that we appreciate what's happened. Councilmember Summers.
Mayor, a point of personal privilege, I think it, Mesa has been recognized as one of the safest cities in America every year because very few disasters occur here. It's a very safe community. That said, we had a hydrological event of biblical proportions, I think I've said in the past, occur right over the center of Mesa. In addition to that, our good city manager was away at the time, and our deputy city manager, Kerry Kent, was thrown into the fire with having to manage an emergency, and we don't often recognize that our general public administrators, such as yourself, do have an extremely important role in emergency management. Also, the mayor was thrown back into the fire, and we were fortunate to, at this crisis, to have someone with such an esteem and deep background in emergency management help lead that effort in the community. And everyone in staff is to be commended for the past and ongoing events and the actions that you took. You did a tremendous job under extreme circumstances. And if we could, a round of applause. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. And we want everyone to know that we have a resource and recovery center located at 830 South Stapley, and that there is no mission accomplished here yet. We don't want it to leave the impression with anybody that we will be spending the next days and weeks still trying to help folks. And it was very encouraging to see in the neighborhoods an army of volunteers coming out to help, and appreciate Mayor-elect John Giles, who has helped to coordinate that effort. So we look forward to a lot of work ahead, and we're going to help folks get through this. And so thank you for all of your service. The next item on the agenda is scheduling of meetings and information.
Ms. Kim? Thank you, Mayor. And I wanted to echo and thank you for the comments. You have a tremendous city team here. Many of your department heads are out there who dropped everything and directed their resources to this particular event. So thanks to all of them. And I think the mayor, and we put, if you could put back on the screen, that's the address and the phone number and the email. We are going to be, staff will be there through Sunday from 8 to 6. We'll be there longer if our residents need that. But it is for citywide assistance, certainly in one area that was really impacted. But we did have citywide flooding. But they can stop by or use these resources. We'll connect them with food and other resources to help them during this time of need. We do have a council meeting that follows this. This is the rescheduled meeting from Monday. We do actually have the kickoff of our Mesa Art Center season this Friday from 6 to 10. The MAC campus will be filled with circus-inspired activities and so forth. We'll have some new exhibitions in our Contemporary Arts Museum, and then we will have a study session next Thursday at 7:30 a.m.
Wonderful. Councilmember Cavanaugh.
Yeah, I'd like to add to that list. We are re-engaging the Fiesta District stakeholders, and they will be meeting on the 17th Wednesday at 3 p.m. in the community room of the Fiesta District substation. Well, our city staff is going to be presenting an update on the current phase of the streetscape project, which is moving towards completion and is starting to look very amazing. Going to give some preliminary plans on phase two, which was approved by Mesa voters. And we're going to have folks from Mesa Community College there to give a presentation on the projects underway at MCC. Particularly exciting, they are going to be opening their Performing Arts Center on October 24th. Mm-hmm. And so another great projects in Fiesta District. The stakeholders is a group of businesses, property owners, commercial, residential, and they have really been part of the process for many years, helping with creating the design standards that were approved by council and keeping us apprised of a lot of the projects that are going on. So a lot of activity there, but we have sent invitations out to those stakeholders, and we hope the mayor can attend and help give a welcome.
Wonderful.
And we look forward to that. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Cavanaugh. Any other things to add?
I think that's it.
Okay, good. We'll entertain a motion to adjourn the study session. We have a motion by the Vice Mayor, seconded by Councilmember Luna. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned.